Bam! Jason Waller here with the Bam Podcast. That's right, Business and Money Podcast. You want to make money? You want to conquer business? You want to go ahead and get that mindset right to take you to the next level and level up? You got to listen to the show. We're going to have all kinds of guests on there, billionaires, millionaires, athletes, actors, you name it. We're going to have them on here. They're going to be talking about their success, their struggles, their life, their hardship. I'm going to talk about my success, my struggle, my life, my hardship. So tune in. Bam! I'm Jason Waller here with the BAM Podcast. It's business, attitude, and money. And I've got a close friend here, a podcast master. And I just found out recently he also used to be a coach for business folks out there and entrepreneurs out there. My man, he has the best show out there right now, the Jordan Harbinger Show. How you doing, Jordan?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. Dude, you turn that energy on like Guy Fieri going to Flavortown.
Well, dude, it's in me. And the deal is I drink a little bit of caffeine a day. Never done any hardcore drugs. Trust me, I've thought about it. I asked the wife, I'm like, should I try Coke? And she's like, no, you'll explode.
Yeah,
so I've stayed
explode.
Away from all the hardcore stuff.
You might explode. Also, you know, it's a little late. I'll speak for myself, I'll speak for you too. It's a little late in the game for us to be dabbling with the white powders, my friend.
You're probably right. We're around the same age too. That's the crazy thing.
I'm 43, and if I try anything that is not something I'm used to, I'm in deep trouble. I guarantee you, it's going to be like. And then, can you imagine the pathetic headline? Like, aging podcaster, well past his prime, dies from something he should have known better than to try.
Oh my gosh, that would be a crazy headline. And you know, it's interesting because I've always been intrigued with people doing things that I was scared to do, right? Like like when edibles came out and I'm like, honey, like, can I try marijuana? And she's like, no, you don't remember 15 years ago when 20 years ago when you screwed up everybody's high? And I'm like, it'll be fine. And I hung out with a lot of NFL players. And by the way, the NFL players, they all get high. Like, contrary to what everybody thinks, they are on it. And a buddy of mine gave me a chocolate bar I thought was a 5, and it was a 50. And I was sick for 2 days puking.
That's terrible.
And I said, never again am I ever doing this again.
That's terrible. No, I know it's funny. The NFL guys are an interesting breed because they get tested for certain things at certain times or whatever it is.
They're warned. They're like, hey, you get a month.
Well, yeah. It's like, cycle off your anabolic steroids or whatever it is. I mean, I don't really know about that stuff, but my neighbor, I won't drop any names here. My neighbor was an NFL player, and we're pretty tight, and I was just like, wow, you can do that? You can do that? You can do that? And he's like, well, we don't talk about it, but yeah. And then what they do is they invest in businesses that do X, and it's like, ah, I see. So if someone comes and there's a truckload of this in your house, you're just, that's one of my businesses. Oh, yeah, it was one of these things. Or like, oh, you got this one. Yeah, well, it's one of the products that I invest in. It's not a habit. There's all these little things. But I you know what? I can't even hate on it because it's like, I get it. A lot of the stuff they have to do is for optics. And it's kind of, it sucks because it's like, maybe I can just live my life here within reason, especially if like what I did was legal. I get it. But,
well, in most states, a lot of the stuff they do now is legal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the NFL players like Calvin Johnson, who was on the show and he's a good friend of mine, and I think you're a fan of him too because you're a Michigan guy like me. And so he's involved in the cannabis business and he does very well.
There's a lot of money in the weed, that's for sure. Yeah. I mean, if you have good branding and all that stuff, I guess. I mean, I don't know much about that niche, but I do know if you go to a dispensary, that stuff is expensive. It's taxed highly, but it's all on demand, man.
It is. So listen, I'm so excited to have you on the show again. It's been a hot minute. We haven't been able to catch up in a while. A lot of things have changed. Last time I had you on was right before COVID, or maybe when COVID started. It was right at that beginning element of it. We did it remote like we're doing now. And I think we were discussing, that was the first time I really got to dig in deep. And I always brag about you saying, you know, my guy Jordan here, he's the only grown ass man that I know that's been kidnapped twice. Able
both
to talk about it. It was just a fantastic story.
Yeah. That's funny. I forgot. Yeah. Both times as an adult, because usually you think of kidnapping as kids, but I don't know. I wonder if I think more adults probably get kidnapped just because of kidnapping is usually for with kids. It's usually a parent who's like, I'm not letting my ex-husband see the kid.
Right.
But from strangers, it's usually not that. It's usually adults.
So you have built a livelihood on podcasting. You're like one of the OGs, right? Mm-hmm. You had a show before this, and now your show has exploded. I always hear people talking about your show. I hear it on all kinds of other shows. And you've had some cool guests on there. I mean, some really cool guests. But talk about, you know, you mentioned to me before the show, talk about what intrigued you to really want to get into podcasting. And then talk about some of the most interesting interviews you've had that are just really high level, where if people listen to your show, they're going to get that kind of entertainment.
Yeah. Look, I got into podcasting originally, and this is like 2006, because I wanted to get into, I was teaching a class, like an elective class in law school about networking, and nobody showed up. So we decided to have the class at a bar because it was at least air conditioning in there. And it was like four people. And then I started to really lean into body language and stuff like that. And people were interested in it. So new people would come in every week and be like, oh, what did I miss? So I started recording those conversations, burning those conversations to a CD and handing the CD to the new people and be like, listen to this and then come back next week. And then you can ask questions because you'll have the background of the last 5 hours of me talking. Right. And I won't have to repeat myself. Well, what happened was people were like, oh, I kept the CD. And then I started charging for the CDs, thinking that that would do it. And they're like, oh, I want five of these. One for my roommate, one for my brother, one for my cousin, one for my... And I'm like, I'm not going to get rich selling CDs. The point is I want the CDs back. But then I realized my lectures, that's overstating it. My me talking in this bar with bad sound and no microphone, just on my, it was a mini disc player that I was using to record. I'm like, the information in here must be pretty damn valuable if people are stealing / buying them from me in decent numbers. Like that's pretty unusual. I don't remember the last time I bought a lecture about torts, you know, in law school or contracts. So I wanted to put them up online, and I couldn't at the time. Again, 2006, there was no place to put MP3 sound files on the internet for other people to download. You could try to put them in these chat groups, but you had to learn how to use bots and stuff, and it was just like you couldn't. There was no easy way. And a friend of mine was like, "What about this new thing called podcasting, where you kind of put it up on a server somewhere, and then people can synchronize it with their iPod or iTunes?" And I thought, oh, everyone has iTunes in law school, and some people have iPods. I'll just do that. And so it was one of the first podcasts around, and I decided to immediately turn it into a show, because a lot of places are like just putting up audio from something else. And I thought, nah, you know, people are used to listening to radio in their headphones. So why don't we make this like an internet radio show? And sure enough, that was quite a winning move, because people were like, wow, I feel like I'm hanging out with these guys as they do this show. It's not a repurposed radio show. It wasn't two dudes in a garage talking about technology. It was a totally different topic. And it was like we would drink during it, which nobody else was doing. I mean, it was a whole sort of mix of things that now seems really pedestrian and like, oh, so you had drinks during your podcast? Woo-wee, how revolutionary. But at the time, nobody was doing that. And it really was, it's funny how low the bar was back then compared to now.
You know, so it's interesting that you say that. I'm sitting here thinking, I do this podcast, which I love. And I did the True Underdog before, which you were on. Yeah. And then that went away with my previous company. And then I did this, and this took off again. And I'm like, wow. And a lot of it is because, you know, the listeners go through there. But I get messaged all the time, like, you know, I love your motivation. I love your business advice. I love all that. But I really love when you're laughing and cutting up and being inappropriate. And it's like, it's made me think, man, what if I just take my boy Joe, who's really funny, and we just kind of have like a Jay and Joe show that's funny. But then you go and you see everybody, like you said, it's cliche, people drinking, hanging out, being stupid on there, and everybody's doing it.
Everybody's doing it. The reason, like, if you want to do, I guess you'd call it a friends hang, there's a lot of friends hang podcasts that do work. But the thing is, there's always a different hook. So it's like a friends hang, but it's Tom Segura and Bert Kreischer, you know, two comedians. Right. So it's like, okay, well, those guys are funny and they're always joking around and making fun of each other. So that's the friends hang, because these are professional comedians that have like these large followings. Or it's Andrew Schultz and his friend whose name, I feel bad, I'm just not going to remember that dude's name. And he's a really good, funny dude. But those work. Those friends hangs work. You can't, where a lot of podcasters go wrong, and I see this all the time, people are like, here's my our idea, two dudes talking about Boston sports. And I'm like, okay, how many other shows are doing that? Oh, 5 zillion, just for Boston, right? You got to have another angle, because people, even if you're really funny, you're not professionally funny, so you're going to max out at a certain point in terms of the audience that you serve. So one of the reasons that our show worked back in the day, my original show worked back in the day, was the focus was on dating and relationships. We didn't always have an interview. We had a lot of stuff that was just me and my business partner at the time. We were professional coaches in that area after a while. In the beginning, we were just hack nobodies like everybody else. We were professional coaches in that area. And also, we were early as hell to the game, so there was, like, no competition. Now, if you got a friend saying, it's like, okay, you have to be funny and entertaining, but and then what? Are you famous? Right. No? Okay, well, then what's the other thing? You know, okay, you're cooking food while you're doing it. Well, what kind of food? Right? And how's the videography and the audio quality? There's a, like, the bar is raised in each column, not just in, like, how funny you are, but in, like, where's the value? Because there's just too much friggin' competition from people that are really, like, expert media producers.
Would you agree and say that famous people don't have to try? They can just fuck around on the show. And yeah, people who are trying to make it have to go overboard. Really good videography, really good quality sound, good, you know, hooks and things to bring the listeners in. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, partially. So I think celebrities can kind of do that, but they have to be a little bit careful, and they usually end up pairing up with a professional audio producer, video producer, whatever it is. So like early days, Bert Kreischer podcast was, and I think he probably still does this, it's like him in his house, but there's a dude there, and they said, now he sets up good mics, and there's acoustic panels and stuff like that, and the video is on point. You have to have a certain, there's got to be like a certain cutoff, right? It's like you get it C plus B minus, people are like, fine. But if it's, why aren't you using a microphone? Why are you using the onboard camera audio for this? It's hard to hear. Everyone's on one track. This guy's too right. loud. This guy's too quiet. People will give up on you. But it is certainly easier if you come in with your 2 million you know, Twitter followers, Instagram followers, and then the guy that you're doing the show with comes in with his 2 million Instagram followers, and you're like, we have a podcast now, and you've been selling out comedy theaters for a decade. I mean, there's they've already done a lot of the heavy lifting. Like, if I started a show right now with a best-selling author, the show would do well because I would do a good production. I would run ads on my other properties, and then that guy would go, hey, I'm doing a show with Jordan Harbinger, and he's going to have, you know, his million book-buying followers, and there's right. going to be something there, and people would go, oh, it's so unfair. You guys just get to screw around. And it's like, well, each of us paid our dues in our field, you know, over the last 20 years, so there's or whatever, 10 years. So there's that. But I don't think two celebrities can just, like, turn on a crappy microphone in an airport lounge and do anything and have it actually succeed long term.
Yeah. Well, they definitely don't have to plan what they're talking about, I wouldn't think, but they do need to have some quality. I would agree. Yeah. So with Bert, I have Bert coming on the show soon. Have you had him on your show?
No, I don't. I like Bert. I've been on his show. I don't know what angle I would hit. You know, I'm open to ideas. But yeah, same with Andrew.
I'm a big fan of his, and I reached out to him on Instagram, and he's like, "Hell yeah, let's do it." And I know he's touring right now, but when he gets back, I think we're scheduled sometime late April, early May.
That's good.
I mean, I'm excited to have him on just because he's a funny dude, and just pick his brain and let him be real and raw. I think it'll be good.
Yeah, he's definitely really funny. Tom Segura is funny. I'm sure he would come on. Probably, I shouldn't say I'm sure. He probably would. Yeah. So
yeah, I should reach out to him too. I'm just trying to diversify on my podcast, right? So having you on and talking about, you know, the podcast game, you know, I think I started this with underdog stories, and then it was like more entrepreneurs, but now I'm like letting loose. It's like, now that I'm not a CEO of a billion-dollar company with 2,000 employees, kind of like do whatever I want.
Sure.
I'm like bringing everybody on. Like, what can we talk about? What's interesting? Mm-hmm. What's exciting? What's fun? And, you know, I've had some of my heroes on, like Barry Sanders, Eric Thomas, who's my speaker coach. Like, I love that guy. I've had him on multiple times. But then I've just had, like, I just had this guy on recently, Will Grimes, who I don't really know from Adam. He kind of got a mutual friend to get on. And we had like an hour and a half conversation about business and Lambos and kids and everything. And it's like, that's, to me, is the best content you can put out when it's focused on just normal conversation with people who have done good things in life. Mm-hmm. They can talk a little bit about it, but it's just normal conversation. It's not getting into the weeds of, you know, keeping it structured and going deep. You're actually going wide. I believe in business, you want to go deep, but I think in like podcast or any kind of communication, you want to go wide. What is your suggestion on that?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of depends. If you're doing a show that's a specialty show in a certain field, you should go deep, right? If you're doing psychology stuff, you can go deep. But I agree. One of the biggest mistakes that interviewers make is they get too much into the weeds on something. I was doing a show with Martin Seligman, who's a Nobel Prize winning scientist, the father of. I got to make sure. I might be getting him confused with Daniel Kahneman, who's also on the show. Martin Seligman is a well-known, he's a father of positive psychology. So he's extremely well-known. I can't remember if there's a Nobel Prize in there or not, but he's extremely well-known. And I was doing my prep to listen to him on other shows. And man, all these psychologists would have him on and they'd be like, tell me why you ran for president of the American Psychological Association. And I was like, no one cares.
No one cares.
What are you doing? And then I realized, oh, this is like in your world of psychology that you can't get out of because you don't understand that your audience is not psychologists because this is your podcast and you're absorbed in your bubble. They talk about this, but zero people outside of that arena care at all about this. And you really have to put yourself in the shoes of the listener when you do a podcast. And that's a skill that most people don't have because, right. I mean, think about how many people even have a remote self-awareness in a real conversation with three people and then do that with 300,000 people. You can't. So right. The lack of self-awareness when those people aren't in front of you is magnified by, I don't know, 10, 100x. So you get these guys that are used to giving a lecture to a bunch of psychology students and they're just droning on about X. And it's like, okay, somebody's got to tactfully tell this guy that we're going to move on. And that's a skill that I think a lot of people don't have. And you see it a lot with, imagine a comedian, comedians are good at this because they're performers, but imagine a comedian gets on and starts talking about the nuances of booking different types of clubs and the people that work there and who's easier to talk to at the Improv in San Jose. You're going to lose the audience because nobody cares. Comedians get that because they're performers. Most podcast hosts are just like as myopic as anyone else in their field, and they're going to start getting into the weeds on stuff, and it's not good. Even if the information somehow ended up being good, it's not going to be delivered in a way that's entertaining and people are going to tune out. Like you're just going to lose the audience.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why when I get show notes or anything like that, I try not to, I just want to chat. I just want to talk, right? I just want to, you know, talk about whatever, which leads me to talk about what your show is. Cause I know I've promoted your show before because I'm a big fan of it. You know, there's about six or seven shows that I like and yours is definitely one of them, but your show, it brings so many different culture and vibes. So talk a little bit about your show and some of your best, your favorite episodes or with certain guests of what the listeners here can anticipate if they go to your show.
Sure. Yeah. So I interview, I do quite a variety. Interviews a couple times a week. Fridays, we give advice where people write in with insane questions like, how do I escape this cult? Or my neighbors killed someone and they're watching me on video cameras. I mean, we get the most insane questions. And then on Sundays, we debunk topics that are usually nonsense or like, you know, like we'll talk about crystal healing and why that's fake or Ouija boards or the funeral industry. We'll do a takedown of that. There's a lot of stuff like that where we will dive into a topic people are unfamiliar with and really blow it up. Almonds and why they're terrible for the environment, stuff like that. But the interviews are really interesting, in my opinion, because most recently we did one on microplastics, but then we did another one on why people believe conspiracy theories. I did one on cobalt mining, which is in every battery, and how there's just like essentially child slave miners in the Congo digging this stuff out of the ground, or the science stuff, the deep science stuff that I talked about before. And then we'll occasionally have celebrities on. I've got Terry Crews coming on. I've had Danny Trejo, Kobe Bryant, Ray Dalio, Matthew McConaughey, Mark Cuban, Ludacris, those types of folks. And those are interesting, but it's always, and I probably shouldn't say this, but the celebrities are never the most interesting guests. It's always a scientist or somebody with an absolutely crazy story, like somebody who went undercover in a biker gang and took down a gun smuggling ring or a human trafficking operation. I mean, those are always way, way more interesting. So we do a lot of variety, in part to keep myself interested in the topics over time, but also because we want to be a podcast where you can go and you get whatever you get, but you're like, wow, that was really good. And you're opened up a little bit to different topics. I think a lot of podcasters, and they should niche down. Most shows should niche down. I've been doing this for 16 years, so I sort of reserve the right to talk about whatever I want and open it up a bit. It would be easier to grow my show if my show was like only about artificial intelligence. You know, then it's like, okay, people know what they're getting. You're the one-stop shop for that, et cetera. But I knew that wasn't going to work for me because I was going to get bored. And, you know, that's going to be the killer, the creativity killer and the business killer. So I open it way up and I like doing that. And I think, I know that the audience is there for it because you set a certain quality standard, set a certain interview standard, and people will come for that. And so that's been really nice for me to be able to do. But it is a luxury in the space. I think normally it's better to niche down.
I agree. I think I love almonds are bad for the environment. Yeah. Is that what you said? Bam. Jason Waller here from the BAM podcast. That's Business and Money Podcast. And I have my new coaching out called Business and Mindset Coaching. That's correct. Where I take my experience and my knowledge, which I have got a long sheet of it, building 4 companies over 9 figures, the last one worth $1 billion, 7-time CEO and Entrepreneur of the Year. I've been on a TED Talk. I've got a best-selling book. I've raised capital. I've employed thousands. I've done over $1 billion in sales. I got you. And I started from the ground up. No college education. I'm talking bootstrap with hard work and learning how to build a business. I want to help you do that. Today, you need to invest in yourself and your business. There's nothing better than self-improvement. But I'm not here just to give you the hoorah. I'm here to give you the hoorah and the how-to. I'm here to give you the let's go and the kick ass. So make sure you join my BAM coaching now so you can elevate and change your life. Bam!
I got it. How is it bad? Real quick, tell me how almonds are bad. Because I'm an almond fan.
Yeah, no, I love almonds too, man. The problem is they're grown in California where there's no water, and almonds are one of the hungriest crops around. And there's millions of these, you know, whatever, almond trees in the middle of what we call the Dust Bowl off Highway 5. And they take water out of the ground aquifer. And so the problem is, or aquifer, and the problem is that actually lower, those things never refill. It's not like an underground river that's open and going through some tunnel. It's like it's in limestone. And if you're sucking out billions of gallons of water and you're putting it onto a desert and it's evaporating and then a tree's sucking up 100 gallons to give you a handful of almonds, it's really, 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 really bad for the environment. So there are all these communities around there that the air is too toxic from all the fertilizers and pesticides that they use in the almond trees. So people have like lung damage and cancer, and because it's so dusty, and they can't get clean drinking water because all the water's gone. And you've got like all these migrant workers that are working in pretty crap conditions to do the agricultural part of this whole thing. It's just a really, really bad, it's just a really bad situation. Not only that, almonds are so valuable that there's all these heists where people get jacked, their almonds get stolen, the trucks get stolen, people get held hostage at gunpoint and they get their almond farms robbed. And there's human trafficking because of the migrant labor. Like, it's all this stuff. And you're like, wait a minute, I thought almond milk was good because it didn't come from a cow. And it's like, now you're just supporting human trafficking, environmental degradation, water waste, and God knows what else, you know, pollution.
I'm just going to go walk in traffic when I leave, Jordan. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to go out there and walk in traffic because I love almond milk and I love almonds. And now it's like,
me too.
Holy shit, here we go.
Now, me too. And of course, one of the guys who owns all these almond farms, he pretends to be like this aggrieved farmer, but he's just a billionaire who like is as wasteful as anybody else and gets sued into oblivion every year for false advertising and all these other crap. It's pretty gross what the almond industry does. And I feel bad because there's plenty of almond farmers that don't want to do that, but they can't compete with a guy who's basically stealing water, right? And hiring people who will work for pennies on the dollar and live in squalor to harvest the almonds.
You like oat milk?
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah.
Oat milk tastes a little better anyways. It's like smoother, creamier.
I agree with that. Yeah. But it's hard. It's like, it's a little heavier. You know, you're putting oat milk in something. You can't really get away with the dash of it. It's kind of like, there it is.
It is a lot thicker. There's no damaging things to the world that we know of with oat milk, right? We're safe.
You know, I don't know, man. We'll have to see.
Yeah, you gotta check.
Do an episode about it and tear down the oat milk. Big oats.
I love oats too. Like, there's nothing better than oatmeal with oat milk. It's like,
that's a good idea. They're
supposed to be together.
That's a good idea.
Yes. So let me ask you this. So I want some of the listeners to hear, because I've got, you know, new listeners, the show's grown and now it's a new show and now this one's grown. one of the most intriguing things about you is that, you know, you had a podcast and a business that things didn't go very well. Like it, you kind of said, you know what, I'm going to kind of do my own thing. Not that it ended bad, but you were ready to, and you literally had to start over.
I did,
and you were very, very successful with that. Tell people out there how hard that really is, because I'm experiencing it now, not to your level, right? But I'm like, I had to start over, and it was hard, and it was kind of scary. So talk about that.
Yeah, it was scary. I mean, I do a lot of, in fact, the first few episodes of the Jordan Harbinger Show are all about like the uncertainty. Is this going to succeed? Is this project doomed? Am I going to spend the next 5 years trying to get to where I am now and climb back to the top of the whatever? And it was really scary for a couple weeks because I felt like a blender with the top off. You know, all my energy was going outwards. I felt like every day went by. I couldn't sleep at night. I'd be wired and gross, kind of gross the next day, like the Las Vegas up all night feeling every day for weeks. And I wasn't getting anything done, or at least it felt like I wasn't. And I was really depressed and everything. Anxiety was kicking in, and it was really awful. I mean, it was terrible. I wouldn't wish it on most people. But what it did is once I got focused and I was like, okay, focus on the energy, make a list of everybody you need to talk to, everything you need to do, I started to knock things off this list and off this roadmap every single day. And I felt like I had a ton of momentum. And I came back way, way, way stronger. Inside of a year, the Jordan Harbinger Show was larger than the show that I had left. And our revenue was larger. Was almost as large as what I'd left in the previous company, and the profit was a lot higher because I got rid of a bunch of people, namely partners, that were taking like 2/3 of the revenue, and I was able to spend more on my team. I was able to reinvest more in the business. And so rather than treading water like I was before with the previous company, we were able to reinvest all that money in the business. And so it was like hockey stick growth for a while. Plus, there were some lucky breaks, right? Like my previous business partners didn't know how to run a podcast, surprise, surprise. And so they didn't release anything for months. So people were like, where's Jordan Harbinger? And people were Googling it. And I was showing up first in the search with my new project. Other times people were looking for something that I'd left. And I also had a bunch of networking connections that I'd made over the past 10 plus years. So I called all those people. I made hundreds of phone calls. I went on dozens and like 140 podcasts or something, told people about the new show. So I had all my old listeners come and listen to the new show, and I rebuilt the audience really quickly. It was a ton of work, and I wouldn't necessarily want to do it again, but I know I could do it again because of the relationships that I'd built, the strategies that I developed over time. It was pretty interesting and fun, and it was really heartening to see everything come back together much more quickly than I thought. That was amazing.
You know, so many entrepreneurs are scared to even become an entrepreneur. They're scared to take the risk. They're scared to take the leap. Yeah. Like I coach people on that all the time. Like, you know, they got this fire in their belly, but they don't know how to act on it. They don't know how to make a move on it. They're scared to bet on themselves. And not only did you do that the first time, kind of when you built that up, you're like, hey, I can make, let's do this. I can do this podcast thing. It seems to work. Mm-hmm. But to do it a second time, right? And I can relate somewhat in a different industry, but It is scary. You're right. And it is what's the unknown. And I think people like you, people like me, and some of the listeners out there, you know, as long as you put your head down and you stay focused and you don't keep looking backwards and you don't pay attention to the negativity. And like you said, you know, it's like a blender and all your energy was going out. And you had to like, really, okay, let me figure this out and really focus on the next step. I always tell people it's like taking the stairs. You can't, all right, man, I was at the top of the mountain. Now I'm at the bottom. How the hell am I going to get all the way up there? It's so discouraging. Mm-hmm. But if you don't look at that and you go, well, if I just get to that stone and then I get to that stone and then I get, and all of a sudden you look down and you did it so fast. You're like, here I am. And we're in a better position.
Yeah, it's true. I really did. It's funny because the mountain thing was really an analogy that I can identify with. I really did feel like, oh, I was at the top of this mountain and it was so amazing there. And I'm never going to get to the top again. It's going to take me forever, whatever it was. And I'm never going to, you know, wow, I'm going to work so hard and I'm going to be right where I was. How discouraging, because, you know, you want to be ahead. Like, oh, I have to rebuild this whole thing. It's like watching your house burn down and you're just picking like one brick up at a time. And you're like, where do I even begin? And you're all dirty. You know, that was how I felt.
Right.
But you're right. If you do one foot forward each day and you're like, okay, Step one, I need to make a list of contacts. Step two, I need to email all these contacts. Step three, I need to book myself on all these shows. Step four, I need to assemble my dream guest list. And step five, assemble a list of guests that I can call in favors for, record, you know, set up the recordings, get new recording gear, make sure I rebuild the studio in a place that I can access, like all these things. And I just did it, you know? And it was like every day, instead of going, oh, where am I going to start? Wah, this is going to be so hard. It was like, well, today we built a studio. That's an accomplishment. Today we booked 20 guests for the next quarter. That's an amazing accomplishment. Okay, today we set up all the tech. Today we did this and we took all these meetings, took all these phone calls, did this. So that was really, really helpful. And but you have to really do it. And I understand why people don't want to dive in because they're overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But if you make a plan... Even if you change the plan, I'm not saying you make a plan and stick to it. Plans evolve. But if you make the plan and you start knocking things, you know, checking off the boxes, you realize that you eat the elephant one bite at a time, so to speak. And that is extremely, extremely helpful because I think that's why most people don't dive in. They're like diving into this black box where they don't know how to do anything. So just make a list of stuff, figure it out one bit at a time and do it. And then when you do that, you start to build confidence like, well, I figured out how to build a recording studio or whatever. I can figure out how to get a wrangle a website team and that kind of stuff. That's business, you know. That's basically what business is.
Yeah, you know, I know so many entrepreneurs that are like, or business owners or previous business owners. Yeah, man, I used to have that kind of car and I used to have this big business, but I lost it and I'm doing this now. And to me, what they did is they basically boxed themselves in and they quit. They looked at the bricks in the house and they said, I can't do it. They looked at the mountain and said, I just don't have the energy to do it. And it takes a special energy to get there. But the wisdom and knowledge you've gained from the first experience actually speeds the process up. It doesn't feel like it because we're used to instant gratification on our cell phones and everything's like go, go, go. And it's like, even me, still to this moment, I'm like, when's it going to burst? How soon is it going to get there? Like my ADD kicks in. I'm like, I got to do more. I got to do more. I got to do more. I can't stand it. But then I go back and I go, holy smokes. Like here I am 4 months into it. Look where we're at. You have to understand it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. That it's easier to say than to realize because people want to get to the top of the mountain, but you stop thinking about that mountain thing when you start rebuilding. And also the mountain thing is a little bit of a vanity play. You're like, oh, what will people think? I'm not where I was before. That's why one of the reasons why I leaned into, oh, guys, I had to start over and this really bad thing happened. Because when you do that, you kind of take away. Well, me leaning into it, actually, there was two reasons for this. One, my former business partners, one of the things they had banked on was, oh, Jordan's going to be too humiliated to start over. He's going to feel like such an idiot. Like, look at what happened. His ego's not going to let him do that. And I was like, I know they think that because that's how this guy with this one particular guy would react. Like a lot of ego issues. And he actually turned out to be really easy to counter in the lawsuit that he eventually sued me when I started to become successful, which was very predictable. But he's very easy, and I hate to use this word, to manipulate, because I would go, yeah, what will he do if I do something that makes his ego hurt in this way? And sure enough, it was like, I was just batting him back and forth. It was funny. My lawyer started laughing. I talked to him recently and he goes, I'm looking at the correspondence. You just wound this guy up and walked him right into a corner. And I'm like, I know the guy really well. Ego makes you extremely easy to manipulate. So from a tactical perspective, having a really big ego is a terrible idea, especially if you're in a lawsuit with somebody who knows what they're doing. But I digress. The other thing that was really interesting was, since I leaned into this, it took that objection for me off the table. Like, oh, I'm going to be so embarrassed if people find it. Well, wait a minute. What if I just tell everyone? If it gets out there from me for, it's like Eminem in 8 Mile where he like.
I think the same way. Exactly. I use that analogy. Go ahead. Every time.
Yeah, it's so good, right? He goes up to do the rap battle and he knows the guy's going to be like, you puked on yourself and I'm banging your girlfriend and you're an idiot from the hood. And he's like,
right.
Yeah, I'm an idiot from the hood and you're banging my girlfriend and I threw up all over myself right before this. And the guy goes up to do his like clap back and he stands there because he's like, oh shit.
He's silent. He freezes because he told him everything about himself.
Right. So that was kind of my strategy, was the Eminem 8 Mile strategy. Get that out there. But also it not only painted them into a corner where they were, well, I took their weapons off the table. I would say it actually painted me into a comfortable corner, an uncomfortable, comfortable corner where I was like, okay, my whole story's out there. So now nobody can really hold it against me. And what it had the side effect of doing that I wasn't thinking of in the moment was people were like, wow, I can really relate to that. I've been through some shit. This is a guy that I should support. I would have loved to have had support when I was going through it. So all these people were like, you know, I support you. I'm going to share your show. I haven't listened to you in years. I'm going to give you a shot again because da da da. And I thought, wow, okay, that strategy really worked. But I think if I'd gone on and be like, yeah, I'm so good at podcasting, I decided to start a new one, people would be like, oh, this fucking guy. You know what I mean? And that wasn't the tack that I took at all. I was just like, I got screwed and I'm starting over and it's very humbling and building one brick at a time. And I've got all this uncertainty about how I'm going to feed my kids. And people were like, yeah, I get it. I've been laid off. This sucks. This is great. You're the man. I want to join your team, essentially, emotionally, and you support you. And that worked out really, really well. And I stopped thinking like, I've got to be back on the mountain. Cause I was like, it's out to the world that I'm starting over. So right. Me not looking like I was looking a year or two ago is a non-issue. Nobody expects it. So why would I expect it?
It's crazy. I'm going through exactly similar things, like as we speak. So the first couple months, it was like, I'm angry and I'm bothered and I'm knocked off my mountain. And it's like, what do I do? And oh my gosh, you guys took this from me. And you guys painted me to be the bad guy. And it was like, I wasted like 3 months of anger. And then I just woke up. My wife was like, look, why are you, they took your business. They took your brain. Like, what are you going to do about it? You just go out and rebuild. Like, what are you doing? And it was a wake up, and it was like, and I thought about de-weaponizing, just like you said. If I take those weapons away and I tell people, look, I'm starting. Yeah, I lost a $1 billion company. You're not going to meet many people that build four companies, three worth over 10 million, one worth $1 billion and lose it 90 days. You're just not going to meet them. I was going public. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. So I'm going to talk about that and bring it up. Like, yeah, I lost that. Let me tell you about my wins and my losses. Let me tell you about the struggles. And I always go back to the M&M thing. It's so funny. I'm always, I always tell people, like, when you can de-weaponize and put the things out there that people are going to hold against you, people will feel bad for you. So when I go up and do a speech, if I go up there and I go, I'm Entrepreneur of the Year and I built these four companies and one was worth $1 billion and hundreds of millions of dollars, they're immediately looking up, who is this douchebag? What's going on? But if I go, I lost a $1 billion company and I had to lay off 2,300 employees and 40,000 customers are left in the dark, and it cost me $400 million. It gave me depression. It did this. All of a sudden, instead of them looking to attack me, kind of like they want to rally. Like you talked, they are rally around, right. And now I'm setting the bar there, and I'm just building from there. I'm getting them excited from there. And I think listeners need to understand kind of what Jordan did is when you set your ego to the side and you're able to just get busy in that work of taking those steps up that mountain, it makes a big difference because the knowledge of the failure that you had is going to make speed that up faster than you think. B, you're going to be too busy to be worried about them. And then C, you're going to have unique people that rally around you that you didn't expect because you've been vulnerable to them. You've been honest to them. And you're saying, hey, here's me. And this is what I'm going to do. And people like that.
Yeah, they do. It's relatable. And nobody wants to kick someone when they're down, except for like, you know, kind of gross sociopathic types. We're not talking about that. Most people want to support people when they feel like they can. So yeah, if you come in and you're like, I'm bulletproof, nothing can stop me. People are like, I've heard this before. I don't care.
Right.
You know, have fun being full of yourself, you prick. But if you're like, wow, you know, here's what I just went through and it's awful. And I don't know if you can relate. Everybody can relate. And people really appreciate that. So yeah, I wouldn't say like using it as a tactic is really good because if you're lying, it's not going to work out for you. At least not long term. But if you're going to go through some crap, you know, you might as well be honest about it. I think sort of trying to sugarcoat your failures makes you less relatable. But it's really tempting because, again, the ego says, I don't want people to know that this sucks. I don't want people to know I'm having a hard time with this. I want to look like I know everything and what I'm doing. And, you know, because otherwise people might think
that you're a failure.
That you
failed. And then that hurts people's feelings. Like it bothers people. I don't care who you are, it bothers you. But if you're just upfront with people and you're like, yeah, I failed. There's a lot of reasons why. Hopefully you can relate and you talk about it. It doesn't feel as bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right.
That's true.
So as we wrap up here, I, you know, on your show, you know, you've had some of the best guests you've mentioned. You know, and I'm hoping a lot of listeners here come and check out your show because it is extraordinary. And it's, you know, your interviews are great. I love the Friday subjects. Hopefully you talk about oat milk. But what thing could you lead? You know, we've got a kind of screwed up 2023 happening, right? What kind of two tips would you give listeners out there to be a little happier and in a better position? Because I feel like you're a positive dude, family guy, kids, like you're just a good human being. And some people need to hear some positive energy or guidance or tips into life. What two tips would you give them just on this random Thursday?
Sure, yeah.
Before we end.
One thing I would say is you never know who you can help and who can help you. And we know that we get more joy, for lack of a better word, from helping other people. And of course, when other people help us, that's really good for our personal life and our business. So one of the things that I do every day is I open up my phone, I go in my text messages, and I scroll all the way down. And those are those dead threads where it's like, hey, good meeting you at something conference 2019. Like, let's keep in touch. And you never did because you forgot. You can reach out to one of those people every single day. You know, not your ex-girlfriend or like the boss that fired you unfairly because you reported his brother stealing. You know, like not that guy. But you can reach out and re-engage some of these people and say, hey, you know, it's been a long time. I never really did keep in touch. What's going on with you? I've got two little kids. I'm working really hard on this business. And I want to, you know, where did you land? Are you living in San Diego still? Or did you move? You'd be surprised. I get like a 75% response rate. You know, some of the numbers are dead. Some of the people are like, I don't have time for this. I don't remember who this is, whatever. But you sign it with your name. If they don't remember your name, that's the end of that. But you'll get responses like, oh man, I haven't heard from you in a long time. Yeah, I'm good over here. I got really into gardening or whatever, you know? And you're reconnecting with one of these people every day. They're not going to call you most of the time. They're not going to be like, let's hang out. You know, it's just basic sort of table stakes, keeping in touch. But what happens is over time, over like 90 days, you've re-engaged close to 100 people. One of those people is probably going to have something for you, a speaking gig. In my case, it's like, hey, Jordan, you're top of mind because we talked 3 weeks ago. I'm going into a conference where we're doing sales keynote speaking selector. Do you speak? You'd be a good one for this. And then I got a speaking gig from this, or I got a podcast booking, or someone's like, I don't know if you want to interview this guy. He's a customer of mine, but he's a big celebrity. Like, that's how I got Ludacris on the show. Somebody that I'd re-engaged that I talked to was like, hey, I don't know if this is interesting to you, but one of my big cigar customers is Ludacris. And I'm like, wow, that's super cool. Would you mind? Yeah. So before whatever the Fast and Furious 406 came out, Ludacris came on the podcast, and I got a chance to talk to him and do an interview. And it was because this guy was like, I don't suppose this would be interesting. And it's like, we were just talking about something else, right? I was just sending him pictures of the kids. So I recommend people do that. I call the exercise Connect 4 because I used to do it with 4 people a day, but it got really overwhelming. So it's Connect 1 now, I guess, but yeah, do that. On. The other thing is, you know, a lot of folks are concerned that this economic downturn is going to be the end of their business or whatever. I've run my businesses through 2 recessions. I think that if you look, recessions always seem like they're the Great Depression and they're going to last 6 years and your whole life is screwed. I looked this up and I'm going to butcher it because it was a while ago. The big recession of 2008 was something like 18 months long. Doesn't it feel like it was a lot longer than that? Doesn't it feel like it lasted 4 years? It didn't.
Yeah.
It lasted like 6 quarters. And so that was severe. So think about it. All you need to do is be in the game in 6 quarters of downturn. Now, that's not good if you're a startup burning $100 million in cash every quarter. Like that's bad. But if you're thinking, oh, I better wait till this recession's over to start my business, I wouldn't necessarily do that. I started my last business in a recession and did really well because we were super lean and we didn't need fancy stuff. And it was a recession, so we couldn't afford it anyway. So when the recession ended, all of these lean principles, we came out and we're like, what are we going to do with all this money? Now, right. We thought it was really hard to run this business. Turns out people who have disposable income now, they're just flooding in because our sales funnels are on point. Our sales systems are all together. So don't wait until the recession is over to like maybe go ahead and start a business. Start stuff now. Get your crap together. And then later on, when you need to raise capital and the recession's over, it's going to be really easy. Later on, when you're trying to figure out how to get your advertising to work or whatever, it's going to be really easy. That's another thing. During recessions, everything's negotiable. You know, you go, oh, it's too hard to advertise. It's too expensive. Well, if it's a recession, you get 50% off because Facebook's ads are cheap, or ads are cheap, or billboards that have been empty for 6 months are basically free because they're like, just somebody pay for something. You know, nobody's advertising. Well, now's a good time to test advertising because everything's cheap. So there's a flip side to all of this kind of downturn that, by the way, supposedly isn't even happening yet. So just start now. We don't even know if there's going to be a recession. I think there will be, but it's still somehow, we're still somehow not there as of this recording. So don't wait for that to happen, because then it's going to be, oh, well, it's a bull market. I can't leave my job now. Look how great things are at work. The office is so busy. I can't quit now. There's never going to be a perfect time. You'll always find an excuse. So I would say dip your toes in now.
No, I love that. And find opportunity when there's issues. We did the same thing with solar when COVID hit. Everybody was watching television, but nobody was advertising because everyone was scared. Business were hurting. We were getting commercials like 5 for 1. And so we were all over the television. That's why we exploded. So that's great tips. Listen, Jordan, thank you for joining us. You guys got to check out the Jordan Harbinger Show. It's one of the best shows out there. It's very unique. It's extraordinary. This guy's very smart. He's likable. He's got great guests on there. He's a real genuine dude. Obviously loves the M&M story, and he's out there up front with things. I love that. So thank you, Jordan, for joining the BAM Show. We appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. I'll see you at Disneyland.
Bam.